Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Well, good Monday morning, everybody. I am Glenn the Geek from Ocala, Florida.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network. It's September 16th, episode 745, brought to you by Omega Alpha Equine. Good morning, Horse World.
It's Monday.
Monday is my favorite time of year.
This is Horses in the Morning with your lovable hosts, Jamie Jennings.
I am the queen. You listen to me.
I'm sorry that people are so jealous of me, but I can't help it that I'm popular.
Glenn the Geek.
You look especially radiant today, Your Grace.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Happy Monday.
Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you for joining us on this Monday morning. I got to tell you, Jamie, you remember on Friday's show, you went on your rant about the Mets, baseball, you know, the Mets and all of that,
yes,
and how much you didn't like the Mets. Well, Ellen wrote this on our Facebook page. Jamie is so funny. Here I am in Manhattan, New York City, listening to the podcast. She doesn't like the Mets. I grew up with them in Queens. Love them. Why doesn't she like them? Very funny podcast. Thanks, Ellen. So even though you totally ripped her, she still thinks you're funny. Or maybe that's why she thinks you're funny, because you don't like the Mets.
I don't know.
So what is it about the Mets?
I can't help it that she likes the blue-collar team of New York. I mean, really, seriously. No, I don't like the Mets because I'm a Braves fan. I'm sorry, it's like rivalry. Mets Braves are always going for the, well, they used to always vie for the pennant. But now, obviously, the Braves are going to take it this year, and I'm sorry about your Mets, that sucks. But our magic number is like 4 right now, so we're about to clinch. So that's why.
All right, good. Well, there you go, Ellen. I got your answer. Why she hates
Ellen,
you.
Ellen should be used to it. She lives in New York where there's such a rivalry between between the Mets and the Yankees. I mean, she should be used to people crapping on the Mets.
That's true. That's true. And nobody's going to crap on them more than a Yankees fan. So
I know, right?
Well, there you go, Ellen. I got your answer. Well, I know
thanks
I got to hear about you. Got to hear about your weekend coming up. I got to tell you, we put the pony out for the first time with Beaker, with Jennifer's quarter horse, my little rescue pony, and Scooter went out over the weekend. They got along great. Everything was fine. We didn't want to put him out till he had a chance to recuperate enough that he could run away or at least have the opportunity to, you know, stay and fight. Well, this morning at the gate, they had their first spat. And guess who ended up with hoof prints? The big quarter horse or the little pony? What's your guess?
Oh, I definitely am going to guess big quarter horse because those little hackneys are quick.
We had never, ever seen him kick before. I had never seen him be aggressive before. Well, Jennifer got to witness that this morning. And yes, the quarter horse ended up with the hoof prints. So I don't know who won. She broke it up before there was a settlement, I think. But
Wouldn't that be great if Little Pony was the one who ran the pasture and Big Quarter Horse was like, oh, okay, whatever you say, sir.
I think we kind of have like two alphas in the group, and they're fine just being ignoring each other, except when, you know, it's time to go through the gate. And then you know, nobody can be second.
That's great. Well, I'm glad
Jennifer, what's coming up?
That's awesome.
Yeah. Jennifer?
on today's Omega Alpha Monday edition. The number one scientist himself, Dr. Gordon Chang from Omega Alpha Equine, is here to take on parasites. And following a random reconnaissance of equestrian headlines, Wiley, the voice of Horse Nation, stops by with some comic relief. And happy National Play-Doh Day, everybody. Please play responsibly.
Guess what Jamie's going to get in her life very shortly? Large quantities of gooey Play-Doh.
I'm sorry, that we'll be fighting for it. I love Play-Doh. I'll be like, give me the green. Give me the green. I need the green. Wait, give me the yellow.
That's funny.
Awesome.
Well, my daily winnie goes out to, is a congratulations to Kat from Eat Your Tart Out. She's been a guest here on this show as well. She got engaged over the weekend, and my guess is she didn't know about this because they were on a trip. I know that she actually co-hosted with Helena and I last week on Stable Scoop, and we did an all-food episode. That's all we talked about was food. And she was going away over the weekend to Washington, D.C., and all of a sudden I see pictures of her saying yes. So congratulations to Kat. I wish I knew his name. I cannot remember it for the life of me, and I could not find it anywhere on her Facebook page. So, Kat, if you're going to be married to the guy, at least mention him occasionally. Just saying.
I mean, seriously, give us a name or something. Jeez.
I know. You know how it usually says in a relationship with or, you know, married to? Well, this just says engaged. So
she said, no, her post was, I said yes. That was it.
To who? Yeah. What is the guy's name? And I should know it because she's told me 100 times, and I just cannot remember for the life of me. But anyway, congratulations to the both of you. And I know she listens to the show, so we're very happy for you. And now you've got two, right?
Yes. All right, my daily Winnie goes out to a dog, and it is also an unnamed dog because the article did not mention his name in the entire thing. But let me tell you a little story. So this couple has a young child, 7 months old, and they moved to a new place. They moved to Charleston, South Carolina, and Uta sent me this, so thanks for sending me it. They move to a new place, and they hire a babysitter to babysit their young son, 7 months old, named Finn. Well, the dog, every time the babysitter came over, the dog acted more aggressive to the babysitter. And to the point where their family dog, who's like super sweet, they actually had to restrain physically the dog every time the babysitter came in the house. And, you know, that's not the way that their family dog behaved. So Benjamin and Hope Jordan, they went and they hid an iPhone under their couch in their house, and they hit record, I guess the voice recording, whatever they do. Well, when they got back, they played it. And Mr. Jordan, Benjamin, says that the recording started with cussing. Then you started hearing slapping noises and then crying and distress and pain. They found out that the family dog was basically telling them that this chick is bad news and was abusing their 7-month-old son. And thanks to the family dog, she is going to be in prison for the next 3 years. Now,
wow,
it's a good dang thing that she's in prison because I would kill her. Like, if that happened to me, I'd be in prison because I would have killed her. But people, listen to your animals, man. I mean, is that an amazing story or what?
You know, the first thing I thought of when you just said that is Jamie's never going to hire a babysitter ever.
Never, ever. I'm done. You've ruined me forever. Unless it's my mother or my mother-in-law, nobody's babysitting my child, or we're going to have nanny cam.
Wow. Wait, the dog. Oh. And that was the only reason they found out was because of the dog.
Yes, the only
acting
reason.
Weird.
It became more and more aggressive every time she came over, and it was several months into it. And every time she came to the door, knocked on the door, the dog would run to the door and try not to let her in the house.
Now, in your case, it wouldn't have gotten to that point because Zenyatta is so much in love with baby Luke, Zenyatta would have ate her face off. So
that's true. you hit my baby once, you're dead. Now it's going to kill you.
It's 7 months
funny.
Old too.
Oh God! Can you imagine? I can't. We got to move on. I'll kill somebody.
All right, let's go to the next.
Next.
I'm happier.
Okay, the next one goes to one of the coolest cats on the planet, Wise Dan. Wise Dan is the horse. Every time he races, we have to talk about it because he's so incredibly amazing. He romped to victory yesterday, breaking the track record at the Woodbine Mile. Now, the Woodbine Mile has been going on for 100 years, and he broke the track record yesterday. John Velasquez, his jockey, didn't even lift his whip as he came around the corner. He was sitting in third, didn't lift his whip, came in around the far turn, and Wise Dan just knows. Let's play the audio, Glenn.
Post. We're off in the Rico Woodbine Miles. Our approval, X Caper and Dimension. They both come on, and it's X Caper who's closest to the hedge to take the early lead, and Dimension runs right with X Caper. Velasquez takes a hold of the champion Wise Dan, who's back in third position. Zaw approval to his outside and fourth. Then we have 7-8 lengths to Riding the River, and the Euro Invader Trade Storm trails this field as they run along the backstretch. X Caper leads it by a neck to Dimension. Wise Dan's just tugging at John Velasquez as they make their way toward the far turn. Zaw approval is in fourth position and four lengths off the lead. Then Trade Storm and Riding the River. It's X Caper hounded by Dimension through a half mile in 45 and two-fifths, and watching them go at it is Wise Dan, who's just a length and three-quarters off the lead. Zaw approvals in fourth position, then Trade Storm Riding the River as they arrive at the top of the stretch in the Rico Woodbine Mile, and Johnny Velasquez gives the green light to Wise Dan, and his response is instantaneous. And Wise Dan has taken the lead, and they come to the final furlong. Zaw approval in a full-out drive in second. Johnny hasn't moved on Wise Dan. Wise Dan, here he is, the titan of the turf, the sensational Wise Dan. Zaw approval was second. Trade Storm.
Oh, man. Johnny Velasquez, just kept looking underneath his arm. Like, he just kept looking back. And it's like Wise Dan was like, oh, here, this is where we go. And he just blew past all of them. That's why he was Horse of the Year. He's going to be it again. That was his ninth consecutive win. Ninth consecutive win, all grade one, mostly grade one stakes races. He has 18 out of 25. He's won. And then that was one of the win and you're in to the Breeders' Cup Mile. So he is guaranteed to start all, you know, Lord willing, in the Breeders' Cup Mile. So we will see him again and hopefully Horse of the Year again. But, I mean, this horse is just amazing.
How old is he?
He's got to be, he's older than three. This is a race for 3 years old and up. And I was like, oh, he's older than 3 years old. That's a great question.
Okay,
I think he's five.
Golden 2007, so he would be going on six, actually.
He's 6 years old. Gotcha. It seems to me that he has struggled a little bit in his early years, but has really obviously come into his own in the later years of his racing career. So, winning nine in a row stakes races, graded races, that's crazy.
I like that title, Titan of the Turf. That's going to stick.
The Titan of the Turf!
The Turf!
I love it.
You
got to
love track announcers, you know? You got to love those guys.
And this is in Canada, too, so I can't believe you didn't say the Titan of the Turf, eh? No, I told Chad we watched it yesterday, and I'm like, oh, I can't wait to get his briar. I haven't even made it yet.
Yeah, you know there's going to be one for sure. No question about it.
Oh, yeah. I need a chestnut. They're all like bays.
You know, speaking of racing, that right now going on at Keeneland is the yearling sale. It's the big yearling sale. It's their big sale of the year. It's a 12-day sale. And the receipts, the, you know, the amount that people are bidding and buying horses for is way up this year compared to last year. I don't know if that's an indication that the racing industry is coming back, but they're just halfway through the sale. They are almost at what they did the whole sale last year.
Yeah, I remember when we talked to Jack Brothers, who was at the sale last year, he said that, you know, the big money is always going to be there. It's the smaller money people, smaller money being people that have way more money than you and I will ever see, still have, you know, they haven't been bidding as much. Well, out of the 6 days that they've had so far, they've almost totaled the entire last year's sale for the 11 or 12 days. So what they're saying is it is back. The pre-economic meltdown is over, and they're feeling like it looks really good. The Keeneland director says the market this weekend was very, very strong. It's impressive to increase those figures by nearly 100% over last year. They said there's a lot of activity in the barn, all the people looking. It's been really good, and those selling, you know, out of all of them, only 88 horses have been bought back. So that is incredibly small amount of people that have gone, nah, I don't want to sell them. Not good enough. Everybody else is like, take them. That's enough money. We're good.
And to give everybody an idea of what kind of money we're talking about, we're six days into the full 12-day sale, halfway through, and it has already reached $216 million.
Yeah, that's crazy. Crazy. And last year, the revenue was $219 for all 11 days. So they're feeling like they're going to surpass, obviously, last year, without a doubt. They think it's going to approach $265 million by the end of it. So, and that's the highest since 2008 when everything crashed. So they're feeling pretty confident out there in Kentucky. And they had a top-priced filly who Bob Baffert bought for $320,000, and that was just a filly. So, but Jennifer found this list, and I think this is an incredible list. And it is the top 10 most expensive thoroughbred colts in history sold at auction. Not private sales, not anything like that, just the auction horses. And
this is yearling colts. This is colts, right? So
colts, just colts, yeah. not mares, not fillies, nothing, just colts. And I want you to I'm going to go through the names, and then you tell me what you notice at the end of this, Glenn, okay?
Okay.
Number 10 was La Etab. Number 9, Jareer. Number 8, Mr. Sikiguchi. Number 7, Mr. Sikiguchi. Mr. Sakaguchi. Number 7, Imperial Falcon. Number 6, Palladius. Number 5, Jalil. Number 4, Snappy Dancer. Number 3, Maiden City. Number 2, Seattle Dancer. And number 1, the highest priced colt ever sold at auction in thoroughbred history, the Green Monkey. Now, what do you notice
like
about all this?
That I've never heard of any of them before.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Now, some of these horses were running in like La Etab and Imperial Falcon. Those are horses from the 80s. So, in the 80s, there was such a boom in horse racing that I don't know a lot of these horses, maybe because they ran in the 80s. But for the most part, 2004 was the Green Monkey, sold for $16 million at auction. $16 million to people, Susan Mangineer, Derek Smith, and Michael Tabor.
They're broke now. They declared
They're
bankruptcy
so
about 2 years later.
What are you going to get out of a horse you spend $16 million on? There's no turnover. Unless that thing has already run and it's won that much, and you're guaranteed that much at auction, in stud fees. But I've never heard of the Green Monkey.
You know, judging by some of the names, I'm assuming that the Sheik had something to do with some of those prices.
Yeah, I would imagine. Godolphin Racing did buy, let's see, Sheik Mohammed bought Maiden City for $11.7 million. Godolphin Racing bought Jalil and Palladius for 9.7 and 9.2 respectively. And then Mr. Sekiguchi, guess who bought him for $8 million? Fuseo Sekiguchi. Yeah, there's
a
shocker.
He named him after himself.
Yep. Mr. Sekiguchi.
He knew which horse was his.
Yeah.
That one's mine.
Tell.
That's funny. And then
so many
Darby
brown horses,
and,
you know.
Yeah, Darley and Gainsborough bought Jareer and La Tab. So, yeah, definitely a lot of overseas money in these. But the highest price one, they sound pretty dang American. Padua Stables. I don't know. Let me see if that's in the United States. So,
and Jennifer,
you
found something out about the Green Monkey, who was sold for $16 million in 2004. What did you find out?
Well, the most one of the references I found that seems to be accurate is that that horse stands in Florida now for the whopping stud fee of $5,000. That seems to be actually the high end of stud fees for these horses now that are still around and still in the breeding shed. My favorite one was, where's he at here? Number four, Snappy Dancer, was unraced. He didn't manage to get to the racetrack because in training he was so slow they were embarrassed. So they just put him directly to stud, and he turned out to be infertile.
Oh, my God. Are you serious?
I'm serious.
$10 million out the window.
Oh, my gosh.
So the Green Monkey, if he's standing at stud now, I just did the calculation, Jamie. If he's standing at stud now at $5,000 and they bought it for $16 million, assuming he didn't win anything at the track, okay, or not much, assuming by what he's standing at stud for, I think that's a safe assumption, he would have to cover 3,200 mares to get his money back.
No, that's a lot of sex. Wow. Wow. That's terrible. Yeah, I was just looking up the Green Monkey. He is pretty. I give him that. The Green Monkey is very pretty.
If he had a dressage career, maybe.
Exactly. They picked wrong.
All right, couple
if
other things.
He was a dressage horse. He'd be gorgeous.
And not selling for $16 million.
No.
Hey, a couple other things before we go on with the show, before we get Dr. Chang on here. We just want to give our best and say that our thoughts and prayers to everybody in Colorado. You must be hearing a lot about this in Arizona, but the flooding up there has been incredible. There are 1,300 people unaccounted for that they haven't found. They said that there are 7,000 people that have been evacuated. There's all kinds of stories about people having to just desert their horses and then horses being rescued. And Dr. Jimenez is going to be on this Thursday in the monthly look at large animal rescue. And she knows a lot of people out there, so I'm assuming we'll hear a lot about that this Thursday. But there was one case where a Good Samaritan saw some horses that were in a field and actually managed to rescue a bunch of them, 18 of them, and did that just out of the kindness of her heart before the water took them away. There was one case, and this is incredible, where the water came up so fast it completely surrounded a school, and they had to evacuate 100 kids out of the elementary school by helicopter. So, you know, I guess it's just because of the ravines and the gullies and, you know, how quickly things can wash out in territory like that, that it's been causing a lot of the problems. But it's been ferocious flooding, some of the worst they've ever had.
Just to see it, it's just unbelievable. A lot of the pictures are from helicopters. And, you know, that color that floodwater gets, that muddy red, just you can see it up to the roof. Like, I mean, you're watching the helicopter doing the flyover, and they've got the camera shooting down, and you can see roofs. That's all you can see is the roof of the house, nothing else. And it is just, I mean, it's just heartbreaking to imagine living in a situation like that. And obviously there's a pretty darn big river that goes through Colorado called the Colorado River, and I'm sure that's not helping out either. But just terribly sad, just terribly sad what's going on. Roads washed out. And, I don't even know what you would do, but that's the reason to have preparation, I guess, you know, but... Awful.
They've had a rough couple of years between the fires and now the floods, and I mean they just have, and of course having all those fires doesn't help with the flooding. You know, it takes all the trees away and all the brush away, and just encourages the flooding. So it's just been a heck of a couple of years for our friends in Colorado, and all our best. I know you got one of your horses from one of our listeners there in Colorado. We hope she's doing well. I haven't heard. So.
Yeah, well, they're in the southern part of Colorado, and most of flooding is in the northern part. So Betty's doing okay, but I'm sure that, everybody is connected to somebody. I mean, with over 700 people missing, 700 people are missing? Oh, how can you not be affected by that, no matter where you live in Colorado?
Well, our thoughts and prayers are to them. On something that's a funner, happier note, have you heard about the newest craze going across America right now? And that's horse soccer. Horse soccer is, I am seeing more articles and more things about horse soccer. Have you even heard of it?
I haven't really. The only horse soccer I've ever seen is when these Pirelli people were playing, like kicking around a soccer ball in the arena. And I had my warm blood, and so I went in. I was like, "Oh, let me see how my horse does with it." And he was terrified of the ball. Now this is an event horse, right? But this thing bouncing around, huge giant soccer ball comes at him, and he about left the arena. And she came up to me, and she's like, "Oh, your big tough event horse looks like he's got some holes in his training." And I was like, "Please." I'm like, my horse sees something on the ground. He better dang jump it. I don't want him to kick a cross-country jump. I want him to clear it. So we had a little difference in opinion at that day. Tell me a little bit about what actually horse soccer is before I go off.
I'm going to have to learn more about it because apparently they use this big 50-inch soccer ball. Looks like a big 50-inch soccer ball. Looks like a big beach ball. And they have teams. It's like sort of like polo that way. The difference is that you can't, as the rider, you can't touch the ball. It has to be the horses using their noses or their legs or to either push or kick the ball. And then you try and get the ball through these goalposts. Apparently, from what I understand, blocking another horse is legal. So apparently bumper cars is legal. And stealing the ball is allowed. So, so I imagine there's a lot of fun being had out there with all the blocking going on. But I don't know. It looks like fun. I'm going to have to see. I was watching a couple videos of it. We'll have to get somebody on to talk about horse soccer.
Yeah. So is it like an organized event now?
Yeah.
So it's not just a bunch of Pirelli people kicking around a ball?
No, apparently even in Arizona, there's an Arizona Horse Soccer Association. So it's getting bigger out in the West. And here it says, this article is out of Montana. But, so we'll see. And it looks like they're riding in – in the picture there, it looks like they're riding in English or Australian saddles. I can't tell which from this picture. But it kind of looks like some thoroughbreds out there, too. I don't know. That's all I know. All I know. And the other thing I know is the balls cost $125 if you want to try one at home, and you can find them all over the Internet.
Yeah, it looks like they're wearing those dressage saddles with the keep your leg in place, almost like the Australian flaps on them. And then it seems like you're not allowed to use a noseband on your horse because nobody has nosebands. And the horses look rather irritated. I'm not going to lie.
They all kind of do look irritated.
This is stupid. Why are we kicking around this stupid ball? I can do this stupid sport. I'd rather be grazing. But they look like they're in good shape and well taken care of. And the riders look like they're having fun. That's what matters.
And they're all wearing helmets. I was happy to see that, too. So,
yes.
That was a good thing. The other horse ball that we covered out of Canada that we talked about when we first started the show, we had the horse ball girls from Canada on. That was like a lot more fun, to be honest with you, because they actually would reach over and pick up the ball. They were true athletes because they had to have to pick up the ball from off the ground, and they were kind of crazy. And a lot of blocking there, too, but that one looked like more fun, I think, than this one.
Yeah. Well, as long as they're as long as they're having fun. It is Montana. They have to do something in the snow.
And one other quick thing before we head to to Dr. Chang today is that, remember we talked about Amy Barrington, who had an accident at her farm. She was an inventor. And we had her friend on, was it last week? Beginning of last week? It seems like time flies. I don't remember if it was last week or the week before. But she was in the hospital. She had gotten hurt while working with one of her horses. Nobody's quite sure what happened. And she was in a coma, and then she came out of the coma. She's still, I'll give you an update here quick. Her husband has been posting on their Facebook page almost every day. And apparently she is doing better. She's still not conscious and talking. She can move her left hand, and she can acknowledge people in the room with her left hand and everything. So it's very limited what she can do. Her husband was very excited because she got accepted into a brain trauma treatment center in Atlanta, down in
Georgia. The
Shepherd
Center, man.
Yeah.
Just the Shepherd Center is the best of the best. I did a fundraiser when I lived in Atlanta for the Shepherd Center, believe it or not, around a Kentucky Derby party, and all the proceeds went to the Shepherd Center. So the Shepherd Center is the place to go if you have spinal trauma or brain trauma. And that is all that they do. And the fact that she got accepted into that is fantastic news for her and her family. I mean, that's as good a place as you can get in the entire world.
Well, apparently that was part of the problem is she had to be accepted. They have an approval process. And one of the things they look for is support from family and friends. They want to make sure that, you know, these are people that have some kind of support. And he sent them to the Facebook page. I filled out the application and I sent them to the Facebook page and I sent them to the fundraising page at youcaring.com that we talked about on the show. And he said within an hour I heard that she had been approved, and it was largely because of the Facebook page and
wow.
The amount of support and the fundraising. Their fundraising is up to over $30,000 now. So that was part of the reason that they got into this program, and he was very appreciative. But what I wanted to tell you was that one of her friends, Jill Becker, went to the hospital last night because she's pretty unresponsive except for this left hand. And she thought, well, what would happen if I brought reins along and set a reins and I put the reins in her hand? Apparently she's been playing with this roll of tape. She's been rolling the roll of tape around in her hands for a couple of days. So she brought the reins and put it in her thumbs, and she said she recognized it immediately and started gripping it like you would grip reins, and then moved her hand all up and down the reins and just wouldn't let them go. So, you know, that tactile response, she knew exactly what they were. So that was kind of a neat story, too, that came out yesterday on the Facebook page. But you can follow that. Just look for Amy Barrington on Facebook, and you'll follow the recovery. It's Amy Barrington Recovery, I believe, is what it is.
Yes, it is. And he updates it every single day, so you really get to follow along with how she's doing and get motivated to send money into that You Caring Recovery Fund. So if you have, you know, anything, please. I mean, you can't imagine the medical bills. And then when you throw in the Shepherd Center, it's not cheap. It's worth it, but it's not cheap.
Well, and I know that you know, that's got to be a concern for the family, too. Even if you have insurance, you know, your out-of-pocket expenses for everything she's going through right now is going to be astronomical. Apparently Jennifer is still trying to locate Dr. Chang, so she's working on getting Dr. Chang on here.
Oh, I'm sure he's in his laboratory doing some sort of mad scientific experiment. I have created a horse from the whatever of whatever. You know, I'm not even smart enough to make jokes.
You can see him with the beakers and the little bottles, and you see the smoke coming out of them.
Yes, he's got his hands together. He goes, like, claps them together and rubs them back and forth and, like, looks over his speakers that are smoking and steaming. Just kidding. Yeah, they're looking for him, but he better get on here. We got to find out about this. I need to know exactly how the equine show works. I did not give it yesterday, Glenn, to Edward.
You went riding yesterday. Tell us about that.
I went cross-country schooling with Edward again, and this is so stupid of me. But he's got to learn at some point. He can't rely on Equine Chill forever. So I gave him Equine Chill the first time I schooled him, and he was so calm and waited in line, and he stood for his turn. Didn't give it to him yesterday, and he was back to pawing and kicking, and I'm like, stay away from the back of my horse. He kicks. You know, people walk up to you and try to give you water, and it's like I can't even get a drink of water because he scoots sideways about, you know, 2 miles as fast as he can. Oh, God, you're going to hand me something. It was very scary. But we took my little Joey, the little rescue horse, with a very beginner rider, Shay, who has been leasing him, and she took him cross-country schooling, and we took the pony, Jacob. Edward, yes, no relation to Edward Jacob. They're not the vampire and the thing. It's just total coincidence, vampire and werewolf. Edward and Jacob went, and then Joey, and then my student's other horse who got off the racetrack, and his name is Dante. And so we decided to take them all cross-country schooling with my coach, Barb Cravo. Went there. Well, Edward, who has done this 10 times, he's not the bravest, but he had some good moments. The pony was perfect, of course, jumping everything that it was in his way. He's so good. Joey he doesn't really like to canter, so he would trot right up to the cross-country fence, fling himself over it, land, and trot away. That's how he did it. But it was perfect for Shay. And then the last horse, Dante, seriously, we actually got off the track. He had raced 4 days before, and I handed him to the 16-year-old girl, which is she wanted to train her own horse. She gets on him. I'm not kidding you, Glenn. Oh, you want me to go through the water, which I've never been through? Okay. Oh, you want me to jump this log into the water? Okay. Oh, down bank? No problem. Up bank? No problem. Oh, you want me to canter up the bank, take one stride, and jump off? Oh, sure. No problem. It was ridiculous. This horse was a cross-country machine. This horse is 5 years old, and Edward is 9. And I have done this with Edward like 3 or 4 times, and this was his first time. And her first time, horse and rider's first time on a cross-country course. They ran circles around me. It was embarrassing. I'm like, you're my student, and you're kicking my butt. So it was awesome for them. She's going to post some videos. Maybe I'll put some up on our Horses in the Morning page a little later. If you want to see the way that a young, 16-year-old girl who loves her horse and her horse loves her back, that's how you do it. Not like my horse, Edward, who didn't get his Equine Chill and was having a hissy fit. And, like, every time we'd go to try to, okay, Jamie, go jump that one, and that one. The first two, we jumped sideways because he was trying to run back to the group in the middle. I'm like, seriously? This is the horse I love more than anything, and I want to keep him forever, and I want to snuggle him and love him, and he just doesn't. He hasn't shown that he has the aptitude yet, but he's getting better.
Maybe a different job. Maybe a different job. Can we come up with a different job for him?
Different job, Glenn, would mean he would have a different mother. And I don't want to tell him I love him. He's my horse. He's going to learn his job. And he's not
gonna
bad at it.
He's going to if it kills him.
I'm serious. He is. By God, that horse is going to take me on a cross-country course before he dies. I'm not kidding you. But I love him. He's mine. I love him. Daddy, I love him.
What's Chad say about him? Or does he just roll his eyeballs and give up?
Of course, he stayed home with the baby, and I get home, and he's like, so? Was he braver this time? And I'm like, no, not really. He's like, come on. You know, whereas Jet sees the cross-country jump ahead of him. And Jet will run towards the jump, even if it's not his jump. He will run towards whatever jump is ahead of him, be it a prelim, intermediate, advanced, or training, or smaller. It doesn't matter. Whatever it is in front of him, he runs to it and wants to jump it. Edward sees it and goes, can I go this way? 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 Oh, fine. Okay, I'll jump it. Like, as he's galloping up to it, you know? Like, can I get around it? Can I get around it? No. Okay, fine. But again, he's very green. He raced until he was 8 years old. He's going to be a little slow to pick up a new sport. So you see all the excuses I'm making for him. He'll figure
yeah,
out.
I see that. I see that. I'm listening very closely. I'm listening as a horse husband listens right now, I got to say. not a co-host, but I'm kind of hearing it as a horse husband does. And
yeah.
I got to tell you, it's not good, you know.
He's a little, I think Chad's a little disappointed, but that's okay. I'm not. I will stand behind my little pony. He just needed some equine chill. He didn't get it this time, and he was a little distracted. I think it lent to his herd boundness. What if that horse is herd bound? None, except for mine. So equine chill needs to be on board next time. Sorry, I learned my lesson. Sorry, Dr. Chang. Speaking of, Dr. Chang is on the phone. Good morning, Dr. Chang. You there?
Hello. Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me? Unfortunately,
yes.
I'm on a cell phone.
Oh, that's okay. So, you know, most of the time I am too. It happens. How are you?
Very good, thank you. Just came back from Germany. So, went to the big Spurger trade show. Right? It was very nice, very well attended. You know, but Germany is a place to go to for good food. Good food, good beer. You know?
Now, I have to disagree with you on one of those. I'm a vegetarian, and when I went to Germany, I about starved to death. But not a vegetarian.
You have my
thing. You would in Germany.
I'm like, okay, I ate Nutella and cheese. That was all I ate in Germany.
You mean they don't make greasy vegetarian sausages in Germany?
French fries will pass. It's
yes,
also that.
That is true. But the beer is very good. You are correct. Now, did you travel anywhere or just go to the trade show?
No, I was in Frankfurt, and I was in Cologne. I was up in Dusseldorf, Koblenz. So I just wandered up and down that little stretch of the country for a little bit. You know, limited time, so it was good. I saw quite a bit with the limited time that I had, but it was nice. Can't beat the food and the beer.
No, and how was Omega Alpha received?
Oh, I wasn't there as a we didn't have a booth. I was just attending to look into what the rest of the world has. What's going on in the rest of the horse world, you know, outside of North America.
Gotcha. Well,
yeah.
I hope
that's the best way to do a show.
Yeah, it was
very good. As I said, the best way to do a show.
Well, good. Yeah, no kidding. Just hang out. Well, talk to us a little bit. We're going to talk about Para X today. And and this is for parasites, obviously.
Right.
Tell us about Para X.
Para-X is a herbal formula. It's all made with different herbs. And it's what the key to it is that it has all these herbs have compounds which are effective against a broad spectrum of parasites. Now, let me just digress a little bit about parasites. Parasites, we're usually thinking of two sets of parasites. There's what's called the intestinal parasites, the one that just hang out in the intestines, so the long, the colon, the small intestine, so on. We have parasites that hang out there. And then you have the parasites that actually are in the bloodstream itself, right? So these are the two sets of parasites. Has anybody ever wondered why parasites are bad? Because in my old day, when I was younger, my grandmother used to give me stuff for getting rid of worms. I swear to God, I preferred the worms to the medicine that she gave me. That stuff she gave me was rough, okay? So I used to think, because the common consensus back then was that, well, all parasites do is share in your nutrition, meaning that it takes some of the food that would have gone to you and it would eat some of it. And to me, that wasn't a bad thing because, let's face it, I was not about to disappear because I lost a few calories, okay? Not by any stretch of imagination. If the only bad thing that parasites did was take away some of your food, life is good. But that's not what it is. The reason parasites are bad is just because, for several reasons. One, yes, it takes away some of your nutrition. If you're one of those animals that have a hard time getting nutrition, like digestive process and that, a few calories makes a huge difference. But more importantly, a lot of the things is parasites is really the number of parasites that you have in your system and the output of waste products that these parasites produce. Because a lot of these parasites, when they produce waste products, these waste products, if they're intestinal parasites, they can get absorbed into the bloodstream. And then these waste products then cause a lot of different health problems. The ones that are living in the blood have an even easier route because, again, they produce their waste products, gets absorbed. It's already in the bloodstream, so it just gets disseminated a lot quicker. Your body produces a lot of reactions to it, right?
Now, okay, hold on. Wait a second. Yeah. I never thought about parasites pooping in you and then you absorbing parasite poop. That's
yeah, I was getting kind of grossed out there.
Every living organism poops. You name it.
Even worms and stuff inside you?
Even worms,
gross.
Yeah. That's what the thing that makes parasites dangerous. It's not the fact that they're sharing a meal with you. It's the fact that they're pooping. Now, the thing about it is that one worm poop or one parasite poop is not a problem. When you have 5,000, 10,000, 100,000, 100 million, that's when you get into major problems, right? So
I'm
the whole
kind of
idea
having
with
a problem with just one, Dr. Chang. I'm really just having a problem with
one. Well, that's the one is a big, big one. Usually you don't have a problem. And the nice thing about parasites, they tend to be small. You have a few long, very long tapeworms, but even them, if you compare them to your body mass or to the body mass of the horse, right, it is usually not a huge problem if it's only one, right? But the problem is you never only have one. When you have one, it becomes two. Two becomes four. And you could pretty well see how it multiplies up. So that's why it's the idea with doing a parasite cleanse is to basically try and minimize your parasite count in the body, right? You may not get rid of every single one, but as long as you keep the numbers low, your body has natural defenses that will fight off some of the effects of these parasites. But you got to keep the numbers low. If the numbers become too high, your body, the defense mechanism, it gets overwhelmed, right? So a lot of it, if you have a horse that is healthy and he's vigorous, meaning his immune system is good, he's well-fed, etc., he can tolerate a lot more parasites than you have a guy who's been abused, not being fed well. So you can see the scenario. So a horse that's down and out that has a lot of parasites is worse off than a horse that's well-fed and have the same number of parasites. Right? Hello?
Yeah. I'm still grossed out. That's just awful.
Sorry. No. So with that in mind, right, after my digression here, the idea with a parasite cleanse is really to try and keep the numbers down. All right? Now, people have asked me, well, does the parasite product kill the parasites or does it just chase them away? What I say to them, it depends on the parasite. There are some parasites who are a little bit more sensitive to the ingredients in our Para-X product, so those ones will probably die. Then you have the ones who are not as sensitive, but it makes the environment uncomfortable enough that they will want to exit as quickly as possible. So those ones will just basically drop out and be excreted in the feces. Right.
Oh,
so
you had me worried there for a minute because when you said they wanted to hide, I was going, okay, which part do they hide in? Because that's what was concerning me too.
Those are the intestinal ones, just drop and they excrete it. Right.
Okay.
So the ones that are a lot more difficult to deal with are the ones that are bloodborne, because the ones that are bloodborne, the active ingredients actually have to get into the bloodstream, and once you get into the bloodstream, it has to be in a high enough concentration, the active ingredients, in order to chase them out of the bloodstream or kill them off, right? And that is very dependent on how many parasites you have in there and how strong the product is that you're going to be using, right? So I wish I could tell you we have the magic bullet, but our Para-X product is a product that is for a wide spectrum of parasites. People will ask me, well, will this do for tapeworm? I say yes. For the common ones, it'll do. But then every so often, I get a question out of the blue where somebody will ask me, will it do for this particular parasite? And it's one that is, let's put it this way, a little bit more unique that you normally don't see. And sometimes the question, an answer to that question is basically, well, we don't know, just because nobody has done that study to look at it and tell us if it's effective against that particular one. But in general, against a lot of the common parasites, our Para-X product works wonderfully for that. It takes a little bit longer to work, just because it is not like a drug, right? So so it doesn't the concentrations are not that high that it produces a lot of side effects either, right? So usually the way we dose it, we tell people do it 5 days on, rest for 5 days, and then follow it up with another 5 days. The first 5 days is to kill off the adults and to chase them away. The second 5 days is to rest so that if there's any eggs, it'll allow the eggs to hatch. And the third 5 days is to get rid of those. So that's the treatment cycle.
So what type of horses do you recommend this for? Are these for the horses that have not been dewormed? Is this for the horse that, is just any horse? What do you think?
I would use these for any horse, right? Horses that have not been dewormed, you can start off with doing it this way. There are some people who prefer to use the other type of the drug type parasite cleanse, dewormers. And the reason they want to use those is because, let's face it, it's quick. It's one shot and they call it a day, right? Whereas ours is a little bit more involved. But usually the side effects with ours is a lot less, if any, as opposed to using some of the other dewormers, the drug-related ones.
Gotcha.
So
if
you have a horse that looks like in particularly bad shape, I would use a gentler parasite cleanse, right? And again, with the idea of cleansing, if you have a horse that's in bad shape and you suspect parasites, well, you have to get rid of those parasites. But it's also a good idea to do a liver, kidney, and a lung cleanse on these horses, just because you have a lot of buildup of toxins, especially if the horse has been dewormed for a long time. And you know, one of the ways of getting your horse back to health is to try and cleanse out some of those toxins that are produced by the parasites or produced by the environment wherever the horse is living in. So it's all about getting back to good health.
Well, Dr. Chang, thank you so much for joining us. It's called ParaX, and you can find it omegaalphaequine.com, I would imagine. And yes, and you can find it in many retailers, the catalogs. Everybody sells Omega Alpha, it seems like, these days, don't they?
I would love to say so, but, you know, slowly but surely, our profile is raising to a higher level. More and more people are recognizing us, which is a good thing.
Well, that is a good thing. And we thank you so much for joining us and being a sponsor of Monday's shows every week after week. And we can't thank you enough. ParaX, ParaX. That is where you need to go. Of course, you can always email Dr. Chang if you have any questions. They'll be happy to get back to you. Again, it's omegaalphaequine.com. And Dr. Chang, welcome back to the United States. Now you got to go start jogging so you can lose some of that German weight.
that German beer was good. Can't complain about that. And you know, even for a vegetarian, German beer is good. It's all, if you think about it, there is no meat products in there, all right? Unless you consider the yeast that they use to make the beer animal byproduct.
But it's all vegetarian.
Yes, that is why I'm not vegan, Dr. Chang. If you're vegan, you can't drink beer, and I just can't make that kind of commitment.
Well, the only thing I have to say is I feel sorry for your husband, because the poor man, living on vegetarian meals all the time is hard.
He appreciated his vegan stir fry on Saturday night, okay? He didn't tell me any different anyway.
Well, right after that, he said, "Dear, I have to go pick up something at Walmart," and that was where Burger King came in. So,
is that what he did?
Bye, Dr. Chang.
Bye-bye now.
Bye, Dr. Chang.
You know he does that. He goes to the base and he eats burgers every day.
I don't make him eat vegetarian all the time, but I make like probably three or four dinners a week are vegetarian. But I found this tofu that he actually doesn't hate. So not that he likes it, but he doesn't hate it. So I have to go drive 16 miles one way to Trader Joe's to get this one particular kind of tofu that I bring home. And I made stir fry and it was delicious.
Between the horse girl thing and the vegetarian thing, you're tough to love. He's got to be a saint.
He is. It's true. It's totally true. He's
you
the best.
You know, they say there's the right guy for, or the right person for everybody. Well, you got lucky in that airplane that day.
I did. I did. I scored big time. I know it. I know it. I'm a pain.
Well, speaking of, let's just continue with our show. We got to do a song. Must Have Been a Cowboy by Templeton Thompson is what I chose for today, something we haven't heard ever, I don't think. And then we're going to come back. We have Leslie Wiley from Horse Nation. Plus, I have a survey that I want to do with you later. It was something that was done by insurance.com, and it was about whether men or women are more aggressive, more nasty drivers. And they had like 10 things they went that you can determine. I want you and I to do this. We're going to both do it to see who is the more aggressive driver. Because, you know, being a horse person, driving is something we do a lot of. So when we come back after Leslie, we'll go over that real quick. It should be fun to see. I think you are. I think you're going to be.
Yeah, I'm sure I am.
You're from Atlanta. I mean, jeez. All right, here we go. Must Have Been a Cowboy.
I'm a young woman, but I've got an old soul. You can see it when you look in my eyes. I've always had a notion that I was born too late. I felt that way since I was just a child. Must have been a drifter. I still love to roam. Must have been a dreamer, 'cause this dream still isn't gone. And I still get this feeling time to time that I must have been a cowboy in another life. At night I dream of horses, feel the thunder of the herd and the coolness of a frontier summer night. And it ain't just imagination, like these memories are real, catching up to me for some forgotten time. Must have been a drifter, 'cause I still love to roam. Must have been dreamer, 'cause the dream still isn't gone. And I still get this feeling time to time that I must have been a cowboy in another life. Knew these stars when they were younger. I've been down.
That was Must Have Been a Cowboy by Templeton Thompson. You can find all of her music at TempletonThompson.com. I am Glenn the Geek, and I am here with Jamie Jennings and Coach Jen. You're listening to Horses in the Morning, brought to you today by OmegaAlphaEquine.com. Well, next up, we have Leslie from Horse Nation with the Wacky World of Horses Report this morning. Good morning, Leslie.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good. And I was just looking over some of the things you wanted to talk about today, and one of them I was seeing was the horsefly one. And we are right now, right this weekend was the worst, in the middle of love bug season here in Florida.
And for
those that haven't experienced love bugs before, they kind of look like a firefly, only the small, little smaller than a firefly. They're black like that, and they mate, so they're constantly flying around attached to each other. Well, love bugs aren't really, they don't bite, they might land on you, but the one thing love bugs are is sticky. When they get squished on your windshield, they have this glue-like substance they're made out of, and you cannot get it off. I mean, it is unbelievable. And they come out by the millions. So when you're driving down the road, it's literally like on your windshield. And by the time you get 10 miles down the road, you can't see out your windshield anymore. And then you have to come home every night, and you have to clean the love bugs off your car because you can't leave the sticky stuff on or it'll make marks on your paint. So we go through this twice a year, and we're in now the fall 3-week season of love bugs. So there you go. That's what we put up with here in Florida. Not all sunshine and bikini.
How do they have such sweet names? It seems like a nice love bugs would be nice.
Well, they're constantly mating while they're flying. They come in pairs.
I get it.
They're connected. Yeah, they're
connected. Oh, that's terrible. Terrible.
So anyway, horseflies are much worse than that. And you did this article on horseflies, and you found some of the funniest videos of people with horseflies.
Yes, it made me feel less alone. I hate horseflies. They just drive me crazy this time of the year. And they drive the horses, of course, even more crazy. But, yeah, I found some videos of people just freaking out about horseflies. There's one of a woman just screaming bloody murder. I think her friend's, there's not even a horsefly. Her friend's just playing a trick on her. And then another one of a young girl at a barn who's running around just waging war on horseflies with a dressage whip, which seems like a maybe less an effective weapon, but she is definitely going at it. So,
You found out that there are 4,500 species of horseflies? Oh, my God.
Yeah, worldwide, yeah. So I just thought, it's like I have to deal with these horseflies every day of my life. I think I'll do a little research and just figure out, things that I wonder every day. I'm like, why does it hurt so bad when horseflies bite you? Because it really does. It really stings. It's because they have their mandibles are like scissor, kind of like if you looked at them under a microscope, they would look like jagged saws. And they use them kind of like scissors, so they just bite a hole in your skin and suck the blood out. So that's why they hurt so bad. And also, like, why won't they die? I feel like if I had a penny for every time I was like really swatted hard at a horsefly and I thought I killed it, but then it just kind of flies off again, maybe a little disoriented, and then it comes back some more. Like,
That is why horseflies and cockroaches will survive the apocalypse without a doubt. They're going to come through it just fine. Horseflies and cockroaches.
She wrote in this article, Jamie, that 20 to 30 horseflies can drain almost a third of a pint of blood in as little as 6 hours.
I would be creeped out writing that article.
Between that and the fact that worms poop in our bodies. This morning, welcome everybody to Monday morning here at Horses in the Morning. We hope you enjoy your breakfast.
This is a fun horsefly fact that didn't actually make it into the article, but Charles Manson, the serial killer guy, wrote this epic song in prison called, it was like a 15-minute just like, guitar solo, and it was called Horse Flies. So, I mean, that says something right there.
It's evil. Very evil.
Evil.
Well, now, you also did the Twitter thing this week, which we found hilarious last week, where you found people who were talking about, who mentioned horse on Twitter, who were not horse people.
Yes, yes. Every week I sort of survey the Twitter sphere for funny or just completely random tweets from people who do not have horses, know nothing about horses, and sometimes they're actually pretty funny. A few
this
of my favorites.
My favorite. My favorite segment. I like this better than George Morrison jump claims, okay? This is my favorite of all time. I read these aloud to Chad. He laughed out loud, and he didn't even know what he's laughing at. He didn't know what Twitter is. And then the photo bomb. You got to get to that one. That was my favorite.
Yes, yes. So a few of these random observations. One guy says, I do not understand why a horse wasn't named a zero corn. Hashtag opportunity missed.
The zero
so
corn.
True.
It should be a zero corn.
You mean zero corns in the morning.
Took me a minute. I didn't get
zero
that one right away. I was like, what does that mean?
Someone else said, I would love to go to the haunted horse with you next month, but I'm afraid it will give me nightmares. Nightmares.
That's
I like
lame.
That one.
That's pretty bad. But I like it. I love bad jokes.
I love Chuck Norris jokes. I've always been a fan of Chuck Norris jokes. And this one that you have here is from a – I don't think this is Chuck Norris's official account. This is the guy who does a Chuck Norris account, and he's always putting funny stuff, funny Chuck Norris jokes. So go ahead. Sorry. I like this. I follow this.
he said, Chuck Norris took a water, took a horse to water and made it drink.
That's it. Chuck Norris does.
Goodness.
So there were some good ones. Yeah, now you do that every, what, Friday, right?
Yeah, we do it every Friday. Yeah.
Okay, so I can check out the rest of them over there. You and then also you had an article on the differences between hunters back in the day and hunters now. Tell us about that. That was interesting.
Yeah. Every Wednesday, SpectraVet sponsors a post where we sort of feature a different vintage video of, you know, important or classic or just interesting performance. You know, we do racing, you know, old cross-country rounds, old show jumping rounds. But today, this week, I stumbled across a video of a winning classic hunter round from the late 70s. It's the rider is Bernie Trarig. He's one of the legends of the sport.
Yeah.
And the horse's name is Circuit Breaker, and they're at the Chagrin Valley Horse Show in Ohio.
Chagrin Valley, baby. That's
Chagrin.
Where I used to live.
Chagrin
Falls.
Incorrect. Chagrin Valley Horse Show. The jumps are 4'3". There are a few 4.5-foot fences thrown in. They're all big, sort of massive, solidly built fences, walls, and there's a great big water jump, and the horse is sort of galloping on around, you know, it's on grass, obviously. It's a big, open, galloping course, and the horse just has spectacular form over all of the fences and kind of has that sort of relaxed expression, you know, that we like to see in the hunter ring today, but there's definitely a lot of get up and go, too. Obviously, you have to be moving on a little bit to get over fences of that size, but it's just really, you know, I thought it was interesting sort of side-by-side comparison of, you know, where the hunter ring has sort of come from and where it is today, which, I mean, I think I certainly respect hunter riders. I don't think I could go in and you know, I'm just not enough of a perfectionist to go in and
look
put in
pretty?
One of those beautiful.
That's fine. You're an inventor.
But, right, exactly. But it certainly is interesting, I think.
It's I'm watching it right now, and it's just, it's amazing how, even over these huge jumps, how effortless and flawless, and the rider, Bernie, just doesn't even move. He just
mm-hmm.
doesn't even move over these fences, whereas you and I, if we're jumping the 4-6 fence, we'll about be sideways over the thing trying to help our horse over it, you know.
Right, because that really helps our horses, but we think it does.
We think it does. We definitely think it does. And coming up to these fences, like, he doesn't make a move to the jump. It's almost like the horse just takes him and knows which one. You can't. It's just an impressive. It's like watching a Grand Prix dressage rider, because
mm-hmm.
you can't see them tell the horse anything. And this Bernie Trard was just such an amazing hunter rider. But yeah, the difference, I think, and I don't know, I guess I'm not that familiar with how the hunter jumps actually look now, but these had rocks in front of them, and they're very mm-hmm. natural looking. Jennifer, I bet you could speak to the difference in the hunter rounds back then and now. Do you know what's different with the fences now? Are they just, they fall down easier? I don't get it.
A lot more horizontal poles than there used to be. It's just pretty much pretty little fill. 4 to 6 poles followed by a tractor trailer load of mums. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty much it.
You know, Bernie is, he actually has been on our shows before and a guest a number of times. And he is the one that runs equestriancoach.com. You've probably heard of that website.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he is the
yeah.
president of equestriancoach.com. He's the one that's kind of in charge of that. So, he is still a coach and still training, and obviously you can see from the riding there that there's a reason that he was known as one of the best.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The thing I found most interesting about that round, because I watched it too, is in the more modern hunters, the horses tend to lose all forward momentum by the time they've landed off of a fence. And
mm-hmm.
in this older piece, the horse still maintains or preserves a certain amount of the requirements of
land
an actual fox hunt, of course, in that they land
mm-hmm.
and keep moving.
Right. Yeah.
That was the biggest thing I noticed.
Yeah, that jumped out to me, too. It just is a reminder of where, I mean, you know, hunters, show ring hunters today are so far removed from where, you know, the hunter discipline actually came from, which is fox hunting. And this is more, but definitely more reminiscent of, you know, the skills that you would need to excel in the fox hunt. It's a fox hunting horse.
Well,
yeah, and
it's
if you
a
didn't
good
land
video.
And keep, if you didn't land and keep moving at fox hunting, you were left behind. So
yeah,
yeah.
Which is what you were.
Well, Leslie, this is great. Thank you for coming on again this week. It's horsenation.com. Check it every day. She's always posting stuff, you know, and we enjoy checking it out all week long.
Well, thanks for having us.
All right,
Leslie, I got to tell you just real quick that in the world of eventing, everybody goes to eventingnation.com. That's what everybody checks. Well, now it's starting to swing to when I go to the horse trials, everybody's like, oh, yeah, you have to, before you go to bed, check Eventing Nation and Horse Nation. So it's becoming kind of parallel to it, and I just thought you'd want to hear that. But everybody talks about it now.
Oh, that makes me so happy.
Thank you for job.
Oh, great.
Nice to know you're not getting fired this week, Leslie.
No, not this week.
You're good.
All right,
well thank
you
guys.
Thanks.
Have
right,
a great week.
It is, and it's a fun website, and those kind of websites do take a while to get going and really establish an audience that you know likes that kind of thing. So I knew she would. It's just a matter of time, and she does a great job with it. And what a cool job!
I mean,
she sits around looking at weird YouTube videos all day. So
she's so creative, though. I mean, just so creative.
Is.
If you gave me that job, I would sit there and stare at my computer 8 hours a day and maybe get. I'd get nothing done.
All right. So now the study that I was talking about earlier, done by insurance.com, was a study of men versus women. And what they were taking a look at is who is the most aggressive, sort of angry drivers. And, you know, we do a lot of driving in the horse world. We drive to horse shows. We're constantly driving. And we have to deal with people that, you know, you're coming down the road with your rig, you got your big pickup truck, and you've got your 30-foot gooseneck, and all of a sudden somebody pulls out in front of you because they don't want to follow you. So, you know, they'll make you slam on your brakes. We put up with all that stuff. So we have a reason to be a little aggravated sometimes. Now, if you were to guess, would you guess that women or men would be the more aggressive drivers in your experience, Jamie? And you drove in Atlanta where traffic is not easy.
Speaking for myself, because women are volatile emotional creatures, I'm going to go with women because I can be quite crazy.
Let's find out. So when they took a look at a number of different practical things, and I thought, I have a piece of paper here, and I have your name and my name written down, and we're going to see which one of us has done these things, okay?
Okay.
So the first one is honk at someone driving too slowly.
Now, I am the kind of person, if you're in the fast lane and you're driving slow, I will get behind you and I will flash my brakes repeatedly, flash my lights at you, telling you to get over. And if that does not work, I will pass you when I have the opportunity and lay on my horn.
Well, there you go. There's one for Jamie. I can say I don't ever do this because I forget I even have a horn. I have used my horn so little in life. Jennifer's definitely more of a horn honker than I am, so I'm going to give myself a zero on that one. And I'm assuming Jennifer's going to be jumping in, correcting me along the way here. But, men actually honked horns more than women, which I was surprised at. They won that one, yeah. Swore in front of the kids while driving. Well, I can't exempt myself from this because I don't have kids. But swore in front of the kids while driving. Who do you think, men or women, were higher on that one?
Well, you know, I have tried to curb my language, even though my baby's only 3.5 months old. I have tried to curb my language. However, when Chad was watching the 49ers play last night, he dropped the F-bomb a few times while holding the baby. So I'm going to go with men on this one.
No, women swear more in front of their kids than men. 44% to 30% by a big margin. So now, have you sworn in front of your kid in the car?
I'm just trying down there. I'm trying to curb my language. Yes.
How about flip someone off while driving?
No, I do not.
I haven't done that either.
Glenn, I tell you, I flipped one person off one time. I was in the car. I was like 17 years old, and I had my best friend at the time, Olivia, was in the passenger seat, and we were driving through the streets of Atlanta, and somebody pulled in front of us and like slammed on the brakes. I had to veer to get around him, and both she and I stuck our fingers out of the window and flipped them off, not knowing that there was a police officer directly behind me who also had to swerve. And as we have our fingers out the windows, flipping somebody off, he gets on his little megaphone and goes, "Watch the fingers, ladies." I've never
shot
another
bird. He didn't pull you over, though?
No, did not pull us over, but my butt went numb. I was 17 years old. I probably didn't have my license with me. I was scared to death. I almost pooped my pants, and I've never shot a bird since then.
And we both know people who they do it 100 times while they're driving every day, you know, and I'm scared to do it. Somebody will shoot your ass now when you're doing that. You got to be careful who you're flipping off nowadays. How about brake check the car following too closely? Ding, ding, ding. I do this all the time. Drives Jennifer crazy. I do it all the time. I hate tailgaters. So I do it all. She doesn't like when I do it. I got to tell you, I have driven with Jennifer's dad driving once in 25 years. It was in the first year we knew each other. He drove. We only went about 10 miles, and he is the worst tailgater in the world. And I swore I'd never drive with him again, and we haven't. I have never gone with him where he's been driving in 25 years because I am scared to death. Just tailgates that close. And he tailgates all the time. It's 3 feet from the bumper in the front, and I hate that. So, all right, we're putting you down for a zero there,
brake
too.
Check.
Yeah, okay. We both have done that one. So how about speed up significantly to prevent someone from passing you?
I don't think I've done that. No, because if you want to pass me, you must need to get somewhere quick. So, because I'm already going pretty fast.
I've done that. This is just because somebody's aggravated me. So I have done that one. All right. Gone
sure.
When it wasn't your turn at a four-way stop. You know what? This one, I find more that I sit there waiting for the person who's supposed to go, and you end up wasting time just waiting. I find myself doing that more than going when I'm not supposed to. I think that's more of a problem.
No, I go. That's all I have is stop signs around here, and if you take too long, boom, I'm gone.
You know, in Carlisle, Pennsylvania, where we lived for a long time, every stop was a four-way stop. So you got pretty good at it, or either you got across town quickly or it took you forever. It was one way or the other. So, all right. So so that would be a one from you.
Which one got that one, men or women?
Oh, yeah. Women, men did that more than women. Men
I can
did that
see that.
More than women. Yeah. How about tailgated someone on purpose because he or she was going too slowly? Judging by what you said earlier, I'm assuming you have.
Ding, 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 ding. Get out of my way.
I'm going to put me as a zero because I just hate tailgating. And now we'll continue on.
Jennifer, the wife speaks.
Yeah, I'm calling you out on that one, dude.
Okay, I'll change my vote to one.
No argument from him. Well done, Jennifer.
You know, women there won that one by a large majority. Women will tailgate more than men, apparently. Okay, here's the one that's rude and arrogant. And who do you think does it more? Stolen a parking space that someone else was waiting for. You know, that old captain thing.
Ooh, your audio is not great, Glenn, but stolen a parking space, it's got to be women because they're at the mall at Christmas time a lot more than men are, and I can think that's the only time people steal parking spaces. I've never done that because I think of Tawanda and the time where the girl backed her car into the other girl's car on purpose repeatedly because she stole a parking space, so I can't say I do that. I don't want my car to get keyed.
Yeah, that one might get you shot, too, nowadays. But men do it more often than women. I was kind of surprised about
what?
That one, too. Yeah. Yeah. How about this one? Sped up to block another car when its signal was on. I'm trying to figure out what that one even means. Sped up to block another car when its signal's on.
No,
oh, if somebody's making a left turn in front of you, going to make a left turn, and you're coming and you speed up so that they can't go. I have never done that.
No.
How about this one? Now, this is one I was anxious. This is the one I was really anxious to hear your answer for. How about chase the car that cut you off so that you could glare or flip them the bird?
Yeah, definitely men. That is a man thing because
it
that
is,
would
it
be
was.
My husband. Yeah, I would never chase a car, ever, ever, ever. My husband's like, that jerk, I can't believe you. I'm like, honey, we have a baby in the car. Back off.
How about turn your brights on to oncoming traffic to just be mean? I can't say I've ever done it to just be mean. I've done it to, you know, accidentally, but not to be mean.
If their brights are on and my brights aren't and they forget and I'm blinded, I'll flash my brights at them.
Yeah, that's normal. That is normal, I think. How about keyed someone's car? I can honestly say I've never keyed anybody's car.
No. Who does that more, men or women?
Men.
Huh.
But not much. Men were 3% more than women on that one. But, yeah, I was surprised. And that was low anyway. Apparently, there's not a lot of Carrie Underwoods out there because women were only 3% and men were only 7%. So,
Because I my key into the side of his pretty little two-step four-wheel drive. Like it. Good pull, Glenn. Good pull.
Well, here you go. One other thing on this poll. 75% of the respondents were sorry they swore in front of their kids.
Oh, well, that's good. There is regret. And that makes me think of that country song, that four-letter word that his son repeated, because I've been watching you, Dad. See, country music.
Now, let me ask
life,
you, though,
baby.
Did you have words with Chad the other day when he was swearing in front of the child in the baseball game? Were you like being the good wife and saying, you know, you got to stop doing it?
Yes. You know what I do? Every time he cusses in front of the baby, I turn to him and I go, trash mouth. Trash mouth. Stop it. So last night, as he's sitting on the couch watching the 49ers, and he's like, beep. I'm like, trash mouth, we have a baby now. We can't talk trash.
And you know what the baby's first words are going to be? It's not going to be mama. It's not going to be dada. It's going to be trash mouth. Trash mouth.
Trash mouth. Listen, trash mouth. Wash your mouth out with soap.
That's going to be the first word.
Great.
Well, we're going to be back here tomorrow morning. Jennifer and I will be here, and then Jamie will be back on Wednesday. The Wheel of Trivia will be back on Wednesday, the equitymsg.com. Wheel of Trivia will be back. So you want to join us for that, and we got lots of good prizes on the wheel. And, Jennifer, we have a couple of guests tomorrow morning for everybody, right?
That's right. We hope we have Katon Brader from HRTV is going to stop by for another fun and interesting chat. And cross your fingers that the Skype gods smile on us. Lara Pryor Palmer, winner of the Mongol Derby, is scheduled for tomorrow.
Wow.
And then Thursday will be the Dr. Jimenez will be here with the Large Animal Rescue, and she should have a lot to talk about this month. Thank you, everybody. You can listen to our past shows at horseradionetwork.com or horsesinthemorning.com. You can also catch us on our app. By the way, we got a bunch more Norways over the weekend. I don't know what's going on. We've got to figure out why we're all of a sudden popular in Norway, Jamie.
Because how beautiful Norwegian people are, and they all like that, and they downloaded the app.
So you can find that in the iOS or Android App Store at Horse Radio Network. You have a terrific rest of the day, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Spay, neuter, and geld.
And check out the $16 million horse at auction that I posted on Facebook. I found him actually in the auction ring.
Don't forget pooping worms.